Cheryl's on. Is anybody else on?
Hey, Cheryl, it's Sudie.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay.
Teresa's on.
And
Sudie.
Sudie is on, and
Sue Mullen.
Sue Mullen, okay.
Rick Wagner.
Rick, welcome. Who joined?
This is Nancy Slies.
Hey, Nancy.
How's it going?
It's going. Is Mike Lindinger on? Can always hope.
Yeah. We hope he'll join. He's the...
Who just joined, please?
Dessa.
Hey, how are you doing, Dessa?
Good, how are you?
Okay.
For those who didn't follow the Tevis, the eastern part of the U.S. had 100% completion rate.
We had one horse in and he completed.
That's nice.
Who just joined, please?
Cindy Meadows.
Hey, welcome, Cindy. Did you get the files?
Yeah, I'm just looking at them.
Okay. And, Sue, you also wanted the PDFs, and I sent them to you, and I think you said you got them.
Yes, I got it. I haven't okay. really looked at anything, but I haven't.
I understand. I figure it's nice to get the Word versions if people have Word, because you can sort of, if you need to, reformat them the way you want. That might make better sense to you. But if you can't do Word, PDFs are a lifesaver.
Right.
So, Cindy, you're in Texas, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And Jessia, you're in Canada.
Right.
So I think we've got the north and the south there. And I'll bet you've already had snow.
No, we had probably record highs this weekend.
We're in Canada, are you?
I think we live in Alaska.
Hi, Teresa.
Yeah.
Who just joined?
No, I've been on. I was the first one on, Teresa.
Okay.
Someone just came on.
Who just joined?
Bonnie Milky.
Hey, how are you doing, Bonnie?
I'm doing good.
Who joined, please? This is Cheryl.
Hello?
Who just joined?
Mike Lindinger.
Welcome.
Oh, good.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Fine, thanks.
We probably have 12, 15 people already on, so.
Okay, great.
I think we, in some senses, have a quorum. Yeah, and as Stag is pointing out, I need to actually introduce Mike. Not that everybody needs to be introduced, but everybody should be introduced. The folks who did the performance profiling at Biltmore this year met Mike at the ride, I think everybody at some level has been exposed through the Apex newsletters to the fact that we did do performance profiling at the Biltmore ride this last May, and that involved serious numbers of blood draws for the horses that participated across all the different distances. It also involved and Mike, I'm going to let you explain this better than I can, but a BAI, which was a way of measuring dehydration based on horses' body mass and what we call resistance to different frequencies going across the skin of the horse. So it was non-invasive, which is sort of an intriguing concept. We also did some profile of mood status types of analyses, which were rather disappointing, and we, on our last full member conference call, we chewed on that one a little bit with Dr. Marcella. And then we did progressive recoveries at some level, and then we also correlated all this stuff with rider card information.
And
everybody got their own stuff back. Now, Mike was kind enough, Mike being a a professor, I believe. Certainly, he's got his doctorate.
He's on the faculty.
He's on the faculty at University of Guelph. And, Mike, I'll let you explain exactly what your position there is, because at least the title I've seen is something on the human side as opposed to the equine side, but I know you've been involved in doing this at other rides for years, quite literally. And he was kind enough to do the analysis and correlation of all the data and put it together into a report that actually makes sense. Anyhow, Mike, would you care to give your views at this stage?
Sure. Yeah, so for a little bit of clarification, thank you very much for the introduction, Cheryl and Stag. I'm by training, I guess, I'm a comparative animal physiologist and have been at the University of Guelph working with in the area of animal exercise physiology for 24 years now. So, and I've been working with horses for probably 17 years and started working with endurance horses when I did start to work with horses. And so it was sort of nice to get back into it with this opportunity to work with the Biltmore horses and sort of build on the knowledge in the database, that's been put together over the last 15 to 20 years by my group and by others as well. So what we tried to do, I guess, with the Biltmore and is really try to, I guess, see if we've gone any farther with the physiology in the last few years than where we were 15 to 20 years ago. And I think the one of the really nice things about the way the study fell out at the Biltmore was that we had the opportunity to work with 50-milers, 75-milers, and 100-milers, and we had some pretty good horses in all of those three groups at the Biltmore. So I think everybody's probably had a chance to review both the individual reports on some of the individual horses and then the group reports that I've done. One of the things that I haven't yet done is that I still will do is put together sort of a final report on how the bioelectrical impedance analysis study panned out. What I can say at this point is that the BIA wasn't very good at picking up changes during the ride, and I have yet to collate the data and analyze it statistically. It's collated, but it's not analyzed statistically for the pre-ride and the post-ride data. I think the during-ride data, there's just too much going on with fluid shifts as a result of the post-exercise recovery period, that sort of thing. But time will look at that. The other thing that I haven't yet done that is still underway is the plasma and red blood cell magnesium analysis. So that's still ongoing.
Do you think based on your past experience? And I know this is like opening up a
can of worms.
A can of worms, yeah, right. Do you think the magnesium analysis is going to influence the interpretation of what we've already got in our hands?
No, it won't influence the interpretation of that, because I think the main story there is still a hydration story. And that's sort of what I expected. And, when you look at all the other biochemical and hematological variables that sort of fall out from that study, there's an incredible range of different things that were measured. There was only, in some horses where some of these values sort of fell into outside of what the normal range would be expected for endurance horses. So the main story is still a hydration, electrolyte hydration story.
Okay.
Some right sort of the main correlations you saw in the hydration story there?
Yeah, I think the main one Well, the two main concerns that I saw were the pre-ride hydration, and then the during ride or the in-ride dehydration. So both of those I saw as areas where we still need to continue with improvements. There is, I think, an improvement from what we used to see, 15 to 20 years ago, in terms of most horses that would arrive at the ride site were quite a bit dehydrated, and most of the horses during the ride did very poorly at recovering hydration. And what we do see now is that more horses, when they arrive at the ride site, are progressive with rehydration and trying to restore hydration before the ride starts. And I think before then, people may not have had a very good appreciation for the fact that, the transport stress and just being at a new site can contribute to a pretty substantial amount of pre-ride dehydration. And one of the other things during the ride is I don't think people had a very good appreciation for how much and how fast horses can become dehydrated during one of these events. And we do see that in a few instances, still at the Biltmore this year, that a few horses really became dehydrated a lot very quickly. So I think those are the two sort of take-home messages is that a lot of horses are doing better, but some horses and some folks need to do a lot better with strategies before the ride and during the ride to get hydration back and to maintain hydration.
You know, one thing would probably be easy to do, Mike, that we could get to you if we didn't look at this, was distance traveled and how that correlates with the pre-ride dehydration.
Yeah. I think that would be very useful. And also the ambient conditions during which the daytime or the nighttime and the temperature.
Okay.
And the other that would be sort of useful is also the temperature inside the trailer. And I don't suspect that very many people in that area would transport with their trailer closed up like they often do up here in Ontario, even in the summertime, which is sort of shocking. Because any kind of air movement you can get over the horse and any kind of heat that you can let out of the trailers is going to be very beneficial for them for cooling, to minimize the heat stress component anyways.
Should we?
But yeah, the transport aspect really, I think it's one of those things that we don't have a good handle on yet. It would be really nice to get a much better understanding of.
Certainly, the distance traveled, as Stag suggests, is something that I can provide. Plus, I know the home addresses at least of the folks, and presumably the horses aren't that far away from home.
And we can do an email out to ask people to at least provide qualitative observations about.
How many days they took? Like how many hours per day they transported, and some people they would stop, I'm sure, overnight and provide some water and so on. And
should we be? I'm going to step into a can of worms here too, but I know when horses are flown internationally, they're frequently put on IVs to rehydrate them. Those of us, aren't going to be doing that. But should we be considering, tubing? I'm not even sure a layperson should do that. I mean, are there any things that we should be doing to make sure our horses do rehydrate themselves? Because I know one year when Super, who'd won Biltmore and got BC three times, you were there the first time, Mike, and he had Super parameters. Mm-hmm. But one year we had to pull him at 60 miles and put him on fluids, and he was going slower, much slower than normal, because we had a fairly new rider riding him. He was just trying to go for completion, and the problem was dehydration. And it was pretty clear that he got over there and just didn't drink. And unfortunately, because we had three horses in the same pen, you know, we had no way of knowing that, which maybe is why you should always have them in separate little paddocks. But what would you recommend as ways to get these horses properly rehydrated that is consistent with what a layperson can do as opposed to a veterinarian?
Yeah, I think the real approach, the real strategy that one should try to take is to try to maintain hydration right from the beginning. So that means even before they get on the trailer, what can you do to try to ensure that they're going to be hydrated during transport? And so this works for anything up to 2 hours in duration. And, you know, if you can get your horse to drink an electrolyte supplement. And, of course, any horse can be trained to drink that. It's just, you know, doing these things religiously week in and week out and day in and day out, literally every day, and not having horses have a choice of what to drink. And that just becomes part of the routine training that you do with the horse. And so one of the things is to try to make sure that they're fully hydrated. And if the horse isn't drinking well before they go on the trailer, then that might be a good opportunity to, if you have somebody that's good with nasogastric intubation, is to intubate the horse and put in 1 or 2 gallons so that you have a reservoir of fluid and electrolytes that the horse can use to thermoregulate during transport. So the stress of transport is nearly as great as the stress of being out on the ride in terms of maintaining their cooling abilities. And so they do that mostly through sweating. So their sweating rates are still going to be somewhere between 10 and 15 liters an hour while they're transporting. And so that's a substantial dehydration. So that's per hour of transport. So 2 hours, you can be losing 30 liters. So, you know, that's like up to 30 liters, which is a lot. And so you can only recover that when you're stopped and the horse is then starting to relax and drinks and eats. And the only way to recover that water to that fluid is to actually have it with electrolytes, because that's the only way to keep that water within the body is with a balanced electrolyte supplement. So that's the real challenge is, 2 hour rest breaks, and can you rehydrate your horse for the next 2 hours and then move on another 2 hours and then rehydrate for the next 2 hours? A lot of people transport 4 to 6, and some people even, 6 to 8 hours, and that's probably detrimental and very, very difficult to recover from within a few days. So that's the number one thing is looking at ways in which to maintain hydration during the period of transport. And no matter what you do, the horse is almost always going to be dehydrated when they arrive. And there's a challenge as well, because I got an email from somebody and it said, both of the horses started the event significantly dehydrated, and they were, after they arrived at the site, they were electrolyted, they drank at least 5 gallons of water a day, and those were wonderful. But the question is, how much does your horse normally drink during the day? And everybody that's riding a ride like this should know exactly how much their horse drinks on a day when the temperatures are, roughly around where they were, around this between 60, 70, 75 degrees in that sort of ballpark. So very, fairly normal conditions. And the horses do drink a lot of water over the course of a day, and it's probably in the 10 gallons a day area that a horse would drink during a day like that. So this particular email, the horses drank at least 5 gallons of water each day. Well, that may be adequate to replace the sweat losses occurring while the horse is standing around in the daytime just eating and moving around in the pasture and not really doing anything. But it's not doing anything to replace what was lost during the wait air. And so that becomes, the additional challenge of trying to replace what was lost as well as maintaining you know, the ongoing losses that just occur all the time.
Let me, before I can see Stag's all set to interrupt again. there is something that I want to sort of explore on that, in that you've got a horse, you say that you want him to replace all the stuff that he's lost while transported. And I really sympathized with the question from the person that sent the question because, hey, our horses got transported 30 minutes and they were dehydrated. How much, and there's all sorts of what I would call corollary questions that come out of that in my own mind. How much will they just show dehydration because they're stressed? How much do they... And then there was this other article I read that basically said that a lot of horses really like sweet water. In other words, water that's had sugar added to it. And they'll drink that by choice, and they'll possibly even guzzle it. And what you're looking to do, as near as I can tell, is get them to dive into water as soon as they arrive at the ride site and guzzle it.
That's basically true.
If you can manage it, and it's like, okay, what happens if you throw a bunch of sugar in some water and they drink down 10 gallons and they're happy as could be?
Yeah, that's not a good idea because that 10 liter, that was it, I think you said 10 gallons of water, or even if it's 10 liters, and if it's got sugar and no electrolytes, that water will just be lost because the body will sense that water because it's not coming in with a balanced electrolyte as a volume overload. It will, because it dilutes all the electrolytes that are in the body that are there, all out because it's just water, and it dilutes. So all the concentrations of all the important electrolytes that the body senses are lower, and the kidneys will then try to get rid of that water, and they can only do that by actually excreting more electrolytes. And so the horse actually becomes more dehydrated when you just give water like that. So it becomes critically important for effective rehydration that the water has, that the horse has, you know, electrolytes in the water, or at least, you know, that there's a balance between the electrolytes given with feeds or in some sort of supplementary form. If it's not in the water, that it at least gets enough electrolytes somehow, and it's balanced with water to provide the ability to retain that the water in the body and let it go, all the fluids, you know, go where it belongs, so that every cell in the body is rehydrated.
So basically, an isotonic solution is the ideal.
It's the ideal physiologically, but of course, it's not ideal in terms of palatability or in terms of GI function either. Isotonic is very hard to manage by the GI tract, and it will almost always, in people and in horses, result in some sort of diarrhea because it just seems to be a little bit too concentrated. So our recommendation with orally administered electrolyte solutions is about half isotonic. So, you know, an osmolarity of closer to around 150, 160 milliosmoles per liter, where, you know, normal body fluids is pretty close to 300. So that means you may have to drink a little bit more of it, but to get all the electrolytes back in, but it is an effective way of restoring hydration. You know, it helps with the palatability. I mean, it just tastes better as well when the salts aren't so concentrated in the water that you're drinking.
Okay. So like Performan Win, which has sugar and electrolytes both, is okay. The sugar per se is not bad, but sugar alone is bad.
Yeah, sugar alone is not good enough because the body needs to have electrolytes to keep the water in it. That's the main reason that the sugar alone won't be good enough. The carbohydrate that's in Performan Win and many of the other electrolyte supplements now is mostly there to help provide energy for the GI tract, for the cells of the GI tract, so that they can absorb the water and the electrolytes, because those are active transport processes. There are some that can occur by diffusion, but the most rapid way to get it into the bloodstream is through active transport processes, and they require energy to do that, and the energy is coming from glucose. So we perform and win and many other ones, they do have glucose or dextrose, which is for that purpose, and then many of them will also have some other things, sometimes sucrose, sometimes fructose. Fructose is also good for transport, but it also helps it taste good. Sucrose will only be there to help it taste good, as well as flavoring agents. So those are there for making it better to drink.
Okay. We've got lots of people on the bridge, and Stag and I have been a little bit piggy about asking the questions. And chime in, folks. I'm going to sort of go at least with people that I know are on the bridge. Sudhi?
Uh-huh.
Any questions?
Hey, this is Nolan. I did want to just speak in my own words to what was just being discussed and see if I have an accurate understanding of it. The sugar water, a little bit of sugar in the water, if it enticed the horse to drink, would not be bad. If you were adding to that, and not necessarily in the water, but even by tube, say an electrolyte with, some baby food or applesauce or whatever, if you were giving those the injections along with the water, it wouldn't be harmful for the sugar to be in the water and enticing them to drink. Am I correct on that?
Correct, but the critical thing is to make sure that you're giving a balance of water with electrolytes.
Okay, I just make sure I was clearly understanding that.
It's a really good question. It's very relevant, and it's easy to not give enough electrolytes, and it's also easy to give too much electrolytes, particularly if you're giving it by syringe and so on. So that's a real challenge So that's the real challenge there. But I think there's a lot of good information out there right now that it allows someone to make pretty good judgments about how much electrolytes they should be giving with per gallon of water that your horse is drinking.
A question for you. Seems I'm finding that with the bigger horse, he's needing less electrolytes to make the same. Would that just be because of having more bulk on him, or compared?
What do you mean by a bigger horse or a heavier horse?
I've got the Clyde Cross.
Okay, yeah. They're a little bit different. They may not sweat as much per kilogram of body mass.
No, I found he sweated more than my old Arab.
Sorry?
He sweats more than my old Arab.
Well, you mean in terms of the volume lost, the total volume lost?
Well, I didn't find a lot of body loss because we had a bad round the first loop, and then he done nothing but pick up thereafter, and I find that I'm using less electrolytes and meeting the same as when I was riding my Arab gelding.
Okay, meeting the same what, though?
Just that I'm doing a whole lot less electrolyting in comparison.
Why are you using less electrolytes?
He doesn't seem to need them to be drinking and maintaining the same amount of water.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. But you shouldn't give electrolytes only to make them drink.
It's a continuation that I'm doing, but I'm finding I'm getting quicker results.
Yeah, the point that's very important to make is that when your horse sweats, it sweats water with electrolytes. And the concentration of electrolytes in the sweat from your horse doesn't change a whole lot during the ride. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of electrolytes in your horse's sweat. And so ultimately what you're trying to do with electrolyte supplementation is to replace the electrolytes that are lost in the sweat. Now, the flood of your horse is very, very salty, and in fact, it's nearly isotonic. It's nearly the same concentration of electrolytes that's in the body fluids. And it, in fact, it's so concentrated that your horse probably wouldn't be able to drink it because it would just taste too salty, even if you tried to make it taste good. So what I was saying earlier, sort of the best we can do with electrolyte supplements that are given that are dissolved in water is to sort of make them half strength compared to body fluids, which means that we really shouldn't be thinking about cutting back on electrolytes that are given in the water. Most manufacturers now are pretty good with their label instructions, and all the reputable manufacturers have a much better understanding of the electrolytes that are being lost in horse sweat. And as far as I can see on the labels that I've looked at, they're pretty good at telling you how much you need to put per gallon of water to try to get effective replacement. And if you're using less than those, you're probably not doing a good service for your horse. But we need to really stick with maintaining adequate electrolyte levels in the water that the horse is consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your horse may be doing better, but it still probably would do a lot better if it got more electrolytes. And, of course, the only way you're going to know that is by trying it. You know, electrolytes, people complain about the cost of electrolytes, but you know what? They're dirt cheap compared to the cost, their costs associated with even a mild dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
And the impaired recovery that occurs with prolonged dehydration. So, I think we just need to really start using electrolytes a lot more. And, try to really understand the benefits that a good balanced water with electrolytes can do for the horse.
Right.
This is Sudi. I have a question. I have two horses that I compete, both of which were at the Biltmore, and they're very similar in that they both, like if I skin tint them at home, just their average skin tinning in the pasture where they aren't really even doing anything, they'd be an A-. And they drink well on the trail after about 15 to 20 miles, and then they drink like champs.
Sure.
But they consistently both score A-es pretty consistently throughout a 50-mile race. And my question is, am I seeing this A-minus skin tinning at home because they are sort of horses that are continually in a state of dehydration, or how do I judge that?
That's probably fair to say. I think most horses that are in training on a daily basis and are not getting adequate electrolytes will be in a chronic state of mild dehydration. And that would be my assessment of a good half of the horses that I saw before the ride started, is that, you know, they were probably in a state of chronic mild dehydration. And it's really hard to get around that unless you are giving electrolyte supplementation and making sure that the horses are getting adequate electrolytes when they're at home. Now, the tricky thing there is to, you know, how much electrolyte do you give at home? Because one of the things you know is that there's electrolytes in the feeds, and ultimately you sort of need to know how much electrolytes your horse is getting as part of their ration, and that can be known. It's one of those things that you can calculate based on the electrolyte content of the hay that your horse is eating and from the various feed rations, because those are on the labels. The hay can be analyzed, and it's sort of good to know what your horse is getting that way, and then you sort of know what you need to add on top of that with an electrolyte supplement so that your horse is truly balanced.
Okay, so I routinely, if I do a conditioning ride, I electrolyte in the feed before the ride and then after the ride. But it sounds like you're suggesting that might not be enough,
mm-hmm.
that they still could be deficient supplement.
Yeah, I would say that 80 to 90% of people are still not giving their horses enough electrolytes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the thing that's is very remarkable, and this is a horse thing, is that they're incredibly tolerant of dehydration, and I think that's in part the way they evolved, you know, in terms of where they have lived over the millennia and over the centuries, is that they have developed an incredible tolerance. But just because they're tolerant doesn't mean that we should sort of, you know, accept that. It's a thing I think that a lot of people take for granted, without the realization of how well or how much better the horse might be able to perform if you were able to better maintain hydration.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
What? I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. I can talk. My question is, what do you think about supplementing just plain salt, NaCl, also in their daily ration?
Well, salt alone doesn't replace, sodium chloride alone doesn't replace the electrolytes that are lost in sweat. So, for example, we know that chloride is the main electrolyte that is lost, and second to that will be sodium, and then third will be potassium, and then fourth and fifth are calcium and magnesium in roughly equal amounts. There's a slight variation between horses. The downside about not providing potassium, magnesium, and chloride is that potassium is...
No, I mean in addition to electrolytes.
Oh, in addition to the...
Not just only.
Oh, in addition to the electrolytes that are in a manufactured product.
Right.
Yeah, if it's a good manufactured product that has a good balance of... you know, sodium, potassium, chloride, magnesium, and calcium, then there's probably no need to supplement additional sodium or sodium chloride unless you know, for example, that your horse is a high sodium sweater. And there are some horses that lose a lot more sodium than other horses and other horses that lose a lot more potassium than other horses. But you can't really determine that unless you do, a series of blood analyses and preferably some sweat analysis as well.
My thinking of doing that is that sodium is makes them thirsty, gives them the salt, the thirst reflex.
Well,
that I found that in adding it to my electrolyte, that the horses will drink a little quicker on the trail.
Yeah, maybe not. That might work with some horses. It doesn't work with all horses, unfortunately. And the thirst mechanism in horses is a supremely blunted mechanism compared to most other animals, and particularly humans, where that doesn't work in many, many horses. Unless you're giving a ton of salt, a ton of sodium chloride, there's probably no real harm in giving additional sodium chloride. And if you find for your horse that it is beneficial in getting them to drink sooner, then I think that's a very good thing. I think you've come across something that could work very well for you and your horse, and definitely, keep doing it if it's working. I think
so there's no harm in it.
No, as long as your kidneys, your horse's kidneys, not your kidneys, but as long as your horse's kidneys are working fine and you know that your horse is going to be drinking well, then there's no harm. There is potential for harm because you are giving it to make your horse drink, but if your horse doesn't drink and they have that salt with, that additional salt with electrolytes, there is a potential for harm if the horse isn't drinking.
Okay.
So you got to be careful there.
So don't go. So just do it like I usually do it pre-ride, at the pre-ride electrolyting. I don't do it throughout the ride.
Yeah. No, I think if you find that that's what's working, then absolutely stay with it, because that's so key. That, and it's nice to hear that you say that you're using water and electrolytes, and you're trying to do things to stimulate thirst and get your horse to drink sooner during the ride. So I think that's wonderful.
Well, I'm not saying it's a whole magic bullet, but it seems to have helped.
yeah, absolutely. So I think, one of the things is you may have enough information from the general report and the individual report that you have. you could probably calculate, you know, what you're giving, what you are already giving in terms of water and electrolyte supplementation, and see where you are in terms of your horse's balance. Are you approaching balance? Or are you well under, or are you over? You know, you could probably come pretty close to a reasonable guesstimate with that at this point.
Well, in the test results that I got for my both horses, the electrolytes in both of them came out pretty close to normal at the end.
You mean the concentrations?
Right.
Yeah, well, the concentrations will always be normal, even when your horse is severely dehydrated. So they're the sodium, potassium, chloride, calcium, magnesium concentrations, they do not change very much when your horse gets dehydrated.
Well, it's just the amount of water that's in there that changes.
Well, it's because the concentrations of those things that come out in the sweat are nearly as the same as what they are in the blood.
Mm, okay.
Right, and because if you have the same sort of concentrations coming out, then the concentration in the horse doesn't change very much, even though the total volume of fluid and the total amount of salt in your horse is gradually decreasing over time.
So what would you need to do to find out if your electrolytes are really, if your protocol is really working? What kind of a...
Well, yes, so the way this... The main thing to do is look at body mass, and fortunately for the Biltmore, there was a scale there.
Mm-hmm.
And horses that are, and most horses during the last half of the rod were pretty good at maintaining or even recovering some of their body mass. And we saw a couple of horses that recovered between 1 and 2.5 gallons during the second half while they're racing, which
mm-hmm.
is a horse that recovers 2.5 gallons, they would have had to been quite a bit dehydrated at the half, but it still shows that there's a good potential for recovery. So that tells you that the horse is doing well at getting electrolytes and water into the body, because the only way to keep that water in there is to actually have electrolytes there as well. So the main key is to, I guess, look at something like body weight.
Okay. Mine did recover really well.
Yeah.
One 1,100-pound horse ended up losing only 15 pounds by the end.
Hmm.
And the other one pounds, not, I don't know about
yeah,
liters.
That's very good.
And the other one lost like 20.
Hmm.
He was
yeah.
a 900-pound horse. So.
Yeah, that's good.
So the electrolytes, in that case, you'd say the electrolyte protocol was okay.
Yeah, definitely it was okay. There's a little bit of room for improvement, but, it's okay, and the horse can easily tolerate that. Now, the thing to look at is that including a fairly good recovery during the second half? And sort of you can look
yeah.
at the first half separately, because that's often where you're seeing the big dehydrations
right.
occurring.
Right, and that's what
yeah.
happened. And then in the second
yeah.
loop, they recovered like hugely.
Mm-hmm.
And in the third loop, not quite as much, but they didn't have as far to go.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. So right. So I think the real thing for you to focus on would be what could you do during, like, immediately before the ride and during the early mm-hmm. part of the ride.
And I
because those are the yet. Those. Yeah, those things are really going to benefit you in the last half, because you're not going to be starting the last half a little bit flat. You're going to,
right.
you know, you could be starting that last half on a full tank and literally do the second half as good as or even better than the first half.
So that's the answers I'm looking for now in the rest of this conversation.
Mm. What would your pre-ride protocol be, Mike, in terms of flight?
Yeah, the pre-ride, you sort of can't separate the transport in, and we talked about the transport. So key is I guess what I would do is try to come in 3 days before, and I know not everybody can do that because of other commitments. I mean, me and other people, you know, we have realized with other things going on. But in the ideal world, I think we would want to give our horse 3 days after transport to just hang out and get to know the place and relax. And that's when they will really come into, eating and drinking well and relaxing in their new environment. And if they're under any sort of stress in that new environment, they're not going to be recovering as fast. And so be very effective at at, you know, trying to get the electrolytes back in, be very good at monitoring what they're drinking and how much electrolytes you're giving to the horse during that period of time. I think that's the number one thing. Now, immediate pre-ride, we're looking at, you know, 24 hours up until the ride starts as things that you could be doing. And my philosophy is you don't really want to be doing anything different on pre-race day or on race day than you're doing in routine training. In other words, everything that you do in training are things that you should be doing all the time anyways, and they're just routine things that you're doing during the ride. Nothing is new for the horse during the ride, in other words. So everything is very smooth. Everything is, you know, that's what's expected by the horse. And so that's a really good strategy to try to take. So, you know, before the day before, you want to, of course, make sure that they're continuing to eat and drink well. So if you can, you know, definitely monitor how much they're eating and how much they're drinking. Continue with the electrolyte supplements if you need to in the water. And then before the ride, you want to try to make sure that they have a reservoir of water and electrolytes in their GI tract, in their stomach. So that's usually a good breakfast with with water and electrolytes. Try to avoid the dry food stuff before the ride, in that period before the ride. So if you're going to be feeding hay and dry feeds, then, you know, wet them with a water electrolyte supplement mixture that your horse is already used to eating, so that they do get that water and electrolytes on board in the GI tract. Now, the nice thing about having that there is you have about an hour and a half to 2 hours before your next stop, and the GI tract is big enough to actually serve as a reservoir to replace all of the water and electrolytes that's lost through the skin, across the skin through sweating. During that hour and a half to 2 hours, it can be fully replaced from what's in the GI tract, as long as there's enough there. And then, you know, then you have a break, and what you have to then try to do is you know, during places where where the pit crews are, and then during your break, at the Biltmore, wherever there's a looper or vet check, and try to get as much fluid and electrolytes in the horse during those periods. So I guess that would be the pre-ride strategy there.
I sort of want to go back to conditioning rides. It was sort of intriguing because I've never used electrolyte supplementation after conditioning rides on the theory that I sort of want to train the horses to be able to cope without if they need to. At the same time, that may be stupid.
Well, I don't think it's stupid at all, and there is sort of a lore, if you will, a body of anecdotal knowledge that's out there that may be beneficial, and there's no science to say that is a beneficial approach or not. So I don't think it's a silly concept whatsoever. However, I don't think that you can train the body to be able to cope with something like that, and I think horses in particular, or humans less so, horses are particularly tolerant. So they're going to be able to do it anyways. And you only probably need to do it if you think that may be a good strategy. You probably don't need to do it more than once a month on one of the conditioning rides that the horse is doing to have any sort of potential beneficial effect that the body may be able to use. So a lot of those sorts of things, they don't need to be done on a routine basis. They may just need to be done once in a while for something that's potentially very stressful for the horse.
And the other thing that, this is again a question of how you manage your horses, and I guess I'm pretty lax about it in many ways, but I bring them in from a ride, and I turn them out, and they've got nice grass to eat. And grass is at least a halfway rationally balanced diet, I've always sort of understood. And that would replenish the electrolytes probably in an overnight frame.
Well, it may and it may not. Like, grass is wonderful because it's got, like you say, it's got water and it does have electrolytes, but there's a huge variation in the quality of grass with respect to the electrolyte concentrations. And there are people that, there are places that you can get your grass analyzed. So from the analysis, you can calculate how much grass your horse would have to eat to be able to replace, you know, the water and the electrolytes. Grass is, you know, it is 80% water, and there are substantial electrolytes in it. But some of the grasses are very, very poor in some of the electrolytes. Some are very poor in potassium. Some are very poor in chloride. Some are very poor in magnesium, and whereas others aren't at all. So it's highly variable. So if that is one of the strategies you want to use, then you sort of need to include that as part of what you know your horse is getting.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I want to throw the floor back open to other folks. I wanted to get that out in my own head at least. Thank you.
I have another question.
Yeah?
People talk about giving horses too much electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
How hard do you have to work at it to give a horse too much electrolytes?
I think you'd have to work really hard at it. You know, sort of a question is over the course of a 100-mile ride, if you're giving your horse more than 3 cups of salt, then maybe you're starting to look at too much.
Of salt or electrolytes?
Of electrolytes.
Okay.
Because electrolytes are salt. So probably there aren't very many people that are giving, you know, close to 3 cups.
Yeah.
It can, you know, and I've asked a lot of people how much they're giving, and, you know, sort of across the board, people are giving somewhere between a tenth and a quarter of what their horse needs in terms of, you know, to replace what they're losing in slack.
Yeah.
Because people still don't have a very good appreciation for how much that is when they're actually looking at it in their hands. How much are they actually losing?
Yeah. I live in the Midwest, and in our area, I probably give more than anybody else, and I hear that comment all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to, you know, encourage them to give more. But I was just wondering ballpark, because I didn't think I was giving anywhere close to too much.
You're probably not, and particularly
nowhere close to that.
Yeah, and probably in the Midwest. And, you know, part of that is a communication problem with people like me that are scientists, and we put things in, you know, units like milliequivalent and millimoles, and what the heck does that mean in terms of, you know, how many scoops and how many ounces and how
exactly.
many cups that my horse is actually losing, right? And so I think, you know, one of the things that I can do better and people like me should be doing better is putting that in terms that you can actually use. So I've started to do that a little bit, and it's obviously something that I need to do more, so that people do say, oh, yeah, this is a cup. My horse lost a cup or a cup and a half of electrolyte in a 50-mile ride, and that's how much my horse needs to get back in during that ride to stay hydrated. Yeah.
Now go ahead.
I have a question about giving the liquid CNPK. That's the 500-ml bottle that you give for milk fever in cattle, and a lot of us use it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
I would switch to a good horse electrolyte product. And the reason for that is that's given to cattle that have scours or losing electrolytes through the GI tract and not through sweating. And so the electrolyte concentrations are going to be quite a bit different than what your horse is losing through the skin, through sweating. Now, what you're doing isn't necessarily bad, because any electrolyte that your horse is getting that they wouldn't otherwise get is definitely beneficial. But so my point is you can probably do better by getting a good horse product. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My understanding was it goes into their system in 4 minutes. It is the stomach, and in 4 minutes it's in their bloodstream.
I'm sorry, could you say that a bit louder and a bit slower?
When I was made aware of this product, I was told that in 4 minutes from administration. It actually does come in with it. It would be in their bloodstream.
It will start to appear in the bloodstream within 4 minutes, but it won't all be there within 4 minutes. We've done those types of studies in horses too with electrolyte supplements where we've traced them using radioactive markers. And, yeah, they start to show up very quickly, and virtually any product will start to show up very quickly. The question is how long does it take for all of it to get there? And some products will take longer, depending on what the composition of that product is than others, and also on what the hydrated state of the horse is at that time. So, yeah, they'll all start to show up very quickly, but they'll move in at different rates.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Mike, what you said about they're starting to get it fairly quickly, that's pretty much, there's nothing particularly magic about that particular.
No, there's nothing really magic. That's just how much time it takes to get, you know, from the mouth into the stomach and empty from the stomach into and get into the upper part of the GI tract into the small intestine. And as soon as it enters the small intestine, there are cells there that are going to readily start taking up some of the electrolytes and some of the water. And all along the small intestine, you will have water and electrolyte absorption going on, and that's where most of the water and electrolyte absorption occurs in horses, in fact, in all mammals. There are some people that think you can use the hindgut in the horse as a reservoir, but you don't want to wait that long because it takes, you know, it takes a good 12 to 20 hours to get material down into the hindgut. So, you want to be able to start absorbing water and electrolytes right away. And the fastest transport rates are right there in the small intestine very soon after the solutions leave the stomach.
Now, when I electrolyte, I always use a probiotic with it. Is there any advantage when you get, you know, talking about getting it through the guts quicker?
For a probiotic, probably not. And one of the things that this hasn't been well researched in horses, but it's been relatively well researched in humans, is that if you give anything with an electrolyte product, and it tends to slow down the rate of gastric emptying and the rate at which the water and electrolytes can be absorbed by the GI tract. So if your main strategy is to really maintain and restore hydration, you don't really want to give anything else in there at that time. So I sort of recommend to people that the number one thing they do is to restore hydration and then look after the rest of the nutrition afterwards. So after something like a 100-mile ride, I would say that the focus for the first 2 hours is water and electrolytes, and then let them get into, once they've stopped drinking as much as they want, then let them start getting into the wet feeds with probiotics and approach it that way.
Yeah, because the electrolytes I use, they do recommend that it goes hand in hand with the probiotic and the electrolyte.
Now, if they say that, it could be because it's a palatability issue, that or there may be some other characteristic of the electrolyte that they would sort of suggest that. But it's I can't think of a good scientific basis for it, and I sort of doubt that they would actually have one because I've researched most of the products that are out there, and
I use the ABC product.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that product is fairly good in terms of the proportion of electrolytes that are in there. I don't know what it tastes like. I haven't, that's not one of the ones that I've actually tasted.
Well, let's put it this way. I've made a mistake once or twice.
Okay, so that may be why they sort of recommend that is maybe for palatability or something.
Mm.
Or maybe because it's just really hard on the GI tract, and they recommend a probiotic. Now, you know what probiotics are there for? They're there as a nutrient source for beneficial bacteria that are in the GI tract. So, and not
bacteria that are usually in the upper part of the GI tract. These bacteria would normally be found in the cecum and the lower GI tract.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be making that recommendation in the hope that it may reduce gastric upset or, you know, some GI upset that they may have found with that product in some horses.
Yeah, because I have found that I can use it without the probiotic, but with my ulcer-bound horse, I did use always the probiotic with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so there are quite a few other good products out there, and you could experiment a little bit with other ones that you think, you know, might work as well or better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit of a mystery out there in terms of what, you know, for you folks, in terms of what's out there, like how do you know what's good and what's not good? And there's because you really can't find any good articles about that. And I've been working on one over the summer, and that's probably something we could pass on to the folks pretty soon.
Yeah,
great.
I know with myself, I'm almost afraid to change anything if it isn't broke.
Exactly. So it's easier to, you know, to tell somebody like me what you're using and then try to get a recommendation after the fact. And absolutely. And so I think, you know, that could be, you know, one of the areas where we develop as well, and something that I can work on with Apex and the ERC. And the trick for organizations like that is because we could end up, you know, recommending certain products over others. So I'm not sure what, you know, if there's any sort of concerns, you know, that organizations have. I personally don't have a problem with it, but people like ARC and Apex may. So that's something that we're going to have to talk about at some point.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I think ARC probably has more sensitivity there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apex, I can pretty much speak for at some level, at least, that if it works and it works well and it's got good science behind it, we're perfectly willing to basically say that that's a good product.
Get the good, you know,
we want to know
information out there because there's so little of it for our sport.
Okay. That's something that I'll work on, and you know, something that I think that would be very good on the Apex website then.
Really?
Once we've had a bit more input from you folks on it.
Now, were we going to be doing some more studies this year at Biltmore again, or climbing answers there?
The answer right now is probably not, but I'm not going there quite yet. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
It was, as Mike will say, I think it was hectic.
I think what people really need to do at this point is sort of really try to use the information that they have and put it into effect over the next year. And probably the year after might be a good time to come back and see how well your new strategies are working. But it would take some time to implement it and try to get things all up in place and running well for you and your horse. And I think that would be sort of the way I would look at it anyways. So if we were going to do a ride next year, it probably wouldn't be the Biltmore. It probably shouldn't be the Biltmore. And we'd probably try to choose a ride somewhere with a completely different cross-section of horses and riders.
I would like to stick my nose in here and compliment Cheryl and Stag and you, Mike, because normally when I do go to a ride and they have research, I don't do it because it is so time consuming. It takes so much time out of the ride. But you had such a beautiful flow of the horses came out of the vet check and walked right around there, and there was grass there that they could eat, so you didn't feel like you were wasting time. And it was just like bing bang, less than 5 minutes. It was just beautiful.
Yeah, I think Stag and Cheryl did a nice job of getting that set up there, and I thank you very much for the compliment as well. And I think it comes from, you know, in large part it comes from experience for me and knowing what to do and how fast we need to get through it and being sensitive to your concerns.
And you had lots of helpers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's key, too. Yeah, great helpers.
Yeah, I think it would, if the next ride could be done, well, it's tough. You know, ideally, one of the things that that helped the riders at Biltmore but hurt the scientific study is we had ideal weather conditions.
Yeah.
Oh, I was wondering.
Yeah, at all. But I
nobody was complaining,
yeah,
mind you. But
how you, I mean, I was thinking of two rides to do, but I would be Vermont and Old Dominion because those
mm-hmm.
are tough rides and they're in the summer.
Yeah.
But then I realized logistically it's probably impossible because those are
they travel.
All the vet checks are away from camp.
Yeah.
And that probably just becomes a logistical nightmare.
Well, we've done those before, and, you know, what we did is we set up in a, like a camper in the back of a truck, and we just go along from vet check to vet check.
Okay.
So that's something that could be done. It is logistically feasible to do that.
Vermont, then, and we could help you lobby them, might be a good choice, Mike, because if you can do that, the beauty of Vermont, you know, they have a 50, a 75, and a 100, but they're started in such a way all the horses finish at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So they arrive, like the first vet check on the 75 is the second on the 100, and the horses come in at about the same time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you can follow from vet to vet check to vet check.
Right, yeah.
Unlike, say, the Old Dominion where, you know, they all start pretty close to the same time and therefore you
they're spread out all over.
Yeah, they're spread out all over Kingdom Come.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that something like that could work quite well where, you know, if we picked a couple of vet checks during and then pick the end, that would probably work quite well, and we'd probably get most of the horses in the study at most of the vet checks.
Okay, well, maybe we can work on the folks of Vermont because they always get a good turnout and do a good job, and that part of the world is also interested in research. We'll get
if you think that you know they would really benefit from something like that, then I would be interested. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we can talk to the Greenalls and the Rojacks, and I'm not sure whether we have anybody from that part of the world on the phone tonight or not.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. Cindy, did you get any questions in? And Bonnie?
I've been talking all the time. I've been monopolizing.
I have someone about the oral CMPK.
Okay. And Nancy, slide?
I'm just having fun listening.
Okay. Sue Mullen?
You know, when you were talking about the participant was talking about the using probiotics. And years ago at an AERC convention, the topic was actually ulcers. And they suggested using Maalox,
right.
Administering your electrolytes with Maalox. And I've been doing that ever since. I found that my horses really like the peppermint-flavored Maalox. I just mix my electrolytes in there. And I just wondering, talking about that, if there's any contraindications of doing that.
Well, antacids in general are not ideal for stomachs because the stomach is supposed to be an acid environment to help digest the foodstuffs that go into the stomach. So that's why stomachs are acidic, is to help break down the carbohydrate type foodstuffs that go down there. And so that's the potential downside. Now, if you know that your horse has a chronic ulceration problem or concern, then you probably do want to continue with something like that. But if there isn't, then it's, you know, you might want to consider, looking at going off it and see how your horse is doing in terms of you know, feed and feed digestibility and electrolytes and so on. There are definitely electrolyte products that are out there that are very acidic themselves. I've measured the pH on some of them, well below 6, with sort of normal pH being in around pH 7, 7.4, thereabouts. So something that's a little bit, that's below 6, could be making the stomach environment
contributing it to it being maybe a little bit more acidic than it should, and maybe something like Maalox may sort of help alleviate that. But if you're using an electrolyte product like that, then I would really recommend, you know, going off of that product and trying to find a better one.
Well,
again,
I haven't ever had any kind of ulcer problems. I was just doing this preventive thing because that was a recommendation.
Yeah. So you have to be really careful with preventative things and look at what other aspects of the physiology that it could be a negative for. And that is one of them, is that you could be affecting feed digestibility in a negative way.
Okay.
Teresa?
No, I was chirping up.
Okay. And Desia?
I'm good. Thanks. Just listening.
Okay. Rick Wasner?
Just listening.
And I know there were a number of other beeps here and there, and I probably didn't catch everybody on the early part of the call. So if you have questions, please pipe up.
Oh, it's nice to have so many people that took the time to listen in. I think that's wonderful. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and we also get these up on the web, so people also listen to them that can't make it tonight.
Right. Yeah, good. So,
unfortunately, we never know how many people do that, but we do get comments that, you know, they do that, so that we know at least that's being used, which is good.
Yeah, very good.
If there's an electrolyte paper or a paper about this research in general, will it be emailed to us?
You mean a publishable research paper? Is that what you're talking about? Or?
Well, or not publishable. You said you were working on an electrolyte article over the...
Yeah, I'm going to put that together. I'm going to get input from the APEX folks on that, and we'll put it on the APEX site.
Yes.
So that we'll definitely do that over the next few months,
and we'll
get it up
everybody
there.
Who was part of the study will make sure that you either get an email copy or we send you the URL so you can you'll have access to.
Yeah,
I love we.
And
that would be fine.
I'm very good at assigning my wife assignments that way.
We will do that though.
Yeah.
I thought of a question.
Yeah.
I guess it has to do with calcium and magnesium and, there's a lot of opinions about giving, you know, extra calcium during a ride to prevent muscle cramping and some people say magnesium. And I'm confused by that because there's so many different opinions about, you know, when and how much and
– right.
And what product. And then a lot of products will have, you know, it won't even really say how much it is in there. Like sometimes it's a percentage and sometimes it's a,
So this thing that I'm working on will help answer some of that. Most products are very, very light in terms of the calcium, magnesium that's provided. In other words, they're providing about between a tenth and a fifth of what, actually being lost in the sweat. So, it is possible to give too much because it's one of those that even though the supplements don't tend to have a lot, it's also you're also not losing a whole lot of calcium, magnesium compared to what you're losing for sodium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, and chloride. So you have to be a bit careful. There's probably a fairly high degree of certainty, but it's not completely certain that with the right amounts of water, sodium, and chloride, that having adequate calcium and magnesium is very beneficial for preventing muscle cramps. The biggest thing that I find with horses that are tying up is they're all dehydrated. So you can't just point your finger at calcium or magnesium or any one thing. Except that they're dehydrated, and that means water and all the electrolytes. But calcium and magnesium are as important in their own way for muscle function as is sodium, potassium, and chloride for maintaining hydration of all the body fluids.
And at the AERC convention this last February, March, whenever it was,
there was February, this
whole rat hole that I think we tended to go down with respect to magnesium. And I never got clear on the pros, if you will, of...
I don't think any pros really came out clearly at that time for magnesium. That was the discussion, that panel-type discussion that
right.
we had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there wasn't any really real pros that came out of that. I can't remember the one rider that he has a site where he also sells a magnesium product out of. So that was one of the reasons why on the Biltmore I took separate blood samples so that I could analyze the plasma and the red blood cells for magnesium and see if there's anything there. So I'm still in the middle of that. It took me forever to find somebody to do the magnesium, and ultimately they said they wouldn't do it, so I ended up doing it myself. So I'm halfway through that. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'll have more on that in a month or so when I get it done.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the one about the heart arrhythmias and all. Was that discussion at the
heart arrhythmias? It's possible. All I know is that Jeremy Olson, who once
Jeremy,
is the guy who was pushing hard on the magnesium, and it's like,
yeah, because he felt
I respect him as a writer, and so maybe it's worth listening to. But what's the science?
Yeah, there's no science yet. I've searched because, you know, that's what I do. I've looked at what's out there and what's been done. And there isn't any published science on it. So, you know, that's why we're doing what we're doing.
That we really appreciate, because for those who weren't at, well, it was probably most of the people on the call were not at that conversation, because that was in the veterinary the two-day veterinary course.
That's
right.
Right. Yeah.
There was some stuff that for some of us was pretty scary, because there were non-veterinarians up there talking about when the horse's heart rate isn't quite right, you need to do this and that. And they were arguing, and, you know, some of us just sitting there, well, the horses have
so you can
regular,
kill the horse if you give him too much potassium.
Yeah,
the horse can die if he doesn't have enough.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, if you got an irregular heartbeat, maybe what you do is you stop.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It was, in its own peculiar way, a very enlightening thing. Mm-hmm. Jeannie Waldron, once upon a time, has told Stag and I, we just don't know enough. That underlined it. And I'm hoping Mike can fill in some of the blanks as well after.
Mike, you said, going back to something you said right at the beginning, you said in terms of the electronic body index analysis or impedance analysis, that pre-ride, I gather pre-ride and post-ride, it correlates pretty well, but during the ride, more work needs to be done to understand what's going on.
Well, no, during the ride, I think we can forget about trying to use it as an indicator of hydration.
Okay.
At least in its present form, I think there would have to be, an incredible amount more of data that somehow has to be collected and then algorithms written and plugged back into the machine. And so I don't see that happening anywhere in the next five years anyways. But it seemed that it was giving reasonable values for hydration in the majority of horses pre-ride and post-ride. When horses were in steady state, in other words, and not recovering from a bout of a bout of exercise. So there's these fluid shifts that occur when both when you're exercising, and then they occur in the reverse directions after you exercise. And so there's sort of instability or disequilibrium in the body fluid compartments. So as things are moving around and settling, then the instrument has no way of knowing that and has no way of compensating for that. So it ended up giving values that for some horses were way too high and some horses were way too low for what the values should have been based on their body mass.
Okay. So for now, it could be... You know, like Sarah has which is
Sarah, the Southeast Endurance Riders Association.
Yeah, so for now, how I would use it now is to take a BIA reading on my horse, on a weekly basis, just when it's training, just so I can become familiar with what the readings should be for my horse under normal conditions. Take a reading before putting the horse on the trailer. Take reading after, about a half an hour after the horse comes off the trailer when it's transported to a ride site, and then just monitor pre-ride to see if the hydration is coming back up.
Okay.
So that's how I would use it at this point, is as a, training and pre-ride type of tool.
Yeah. So it's good for a training tool. It's good for, is this horse ready to go type of thing?
Yeah.
And so that we've got a good tool there.
Well, I think we do, and I have to finish looking at that.
Horse
yeah.
Recovering. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Interesting concept about post-ride is how dehydrated or how hydrated should a horse be after a ride before you put him on a trailer?
Completely rehydrated. And the reason I can say that, I've seen horses complete 100 miles, and within 1 hour after completion, they are fully hydrated. They are not dehydrated at all. Plasma protein is completely normal. The electrolyte concentrations are normal. The hematocrit is normal. The body weight is normal. And that's within an hour of completing 100 miles. And this isn't a slow 100 mile. This was in this particular case, this was a horse that won the race of champions in 95 or 96. One of Valerie's horses. Oh, it was Cash. When she rode Cash at that event. So we did performance profiling on her horse at that time.
That's
phenomenal. We were just absolutely amazed. But, yeah, it can be done.
I bet you don't find that in even the elite human athletes.
No, and there's a reason. In the elite human athletes, they get to a point where they know that they can get through the rest and probably do it faster if they don't look after the fluid and electrolytes, because they don't need to during the last, 4 miles, say, because that will just help them. That will just help them finish faster. Now, in human competition, we don't have best condition, so they don't care, right? And these human athletes are a bit of a different animal because they can just tolerate so much as well. I think some horses with the riders are sort of like that too. During the last part of the ride, they might not care as much because they're going for a time. They're not necessarily going for best condition. So there's a different strategy if you're going to be going for time at the end versus best condition at the end.
Would you suggest electrolyting after a ride?
Yes, absolutely, because after the ride, the horse is severely dehydrated in most cases, unless you've been very religious with maintaining hydration and electrolytes during the ride. So my philosophy is for the first 2 hours after a ride is you look after hydration only. And then once the horse has drank and taken in as much electrolytes as it is freely willing to do so, then let it eat and drink. On its own after that, but try to do everything that you can. And this part of the routine training that you do with your horses on any kind of ride at home, so that it's normal. It's just normal when your horse is, at a ride. A hydrated horse is going to eat well. A dehydrated horse is not going to eat well. They're not going to feel well. They're not going to want to do anything well. So the number one thing is try to restore hydration, and then the rest will absolutely look after itself. Many feeds are dry, and what's very nice to see is that most endurance people are very good with wetting down all of their feeds, wetting down the hay, wetting, soaking the bee pulp and soaking grains and so on. So that's all wetted, which is wonderful, because any of those dry feedstuffs, if that's not done to them, then they go into a dehydrated horse, and that's sort of a recipe for colic. You can make them more dehydrated, and you can get impactions and so on. But I think most people in the endurance community know that.
So when you say you don't worry too much about getting feed into them, it's mainly hydration for the first couple hours, are you basically not even offering them hay?
That's right. Yeah, this, I mean, and it depends on the horse and depends on the level of hydration. So if you're going over a scale and you see that your horse is down 50 pounds at the end of the ride from where it was at the start of the ride, then I wouldn't even think about giving my horse hay. I would think about making sure that I can get 2 gallons in that horse within that first hour with the right amount of electrolytes. Because that is not when that horse should be eating. That horse needs to just be rehydrating. And if you can replace, if you can replace that 50 pounds as soon as possible, then the better off that horse is going to be. So, how much is what's 2 gallons of water? Is that 20 pounds? Is that about 10 pounds
16.
A gallon?
Yeah, 16.
16, yeah.
16 pounds to a gallon?
It's 8 pounds to a gallon.
Oh, 8 pounds to a gallon. So if they're down 50 pounds, which we saw a lot of horses that were down about that much.
6 gallons.
Yeah, that's 6 gallons. So my focus would be if they're down 50 pounds, get 2 gallons in and as soon as you can and try to work on the next two. And you probably will be very successful in trying to get those in the first 2 hours. And the last two, they'll probably get in when they're eating, so that's not such a big worry. But I would definitely not be feeding them if they're down 50 pounds without them getting 2 gallons in first.
When my guys come in off 100, they tell me with no uncertainty they're starving.
Yeah.
Would grazing sort of go along with the water and the feeding at the same time? I mean, if it's 80% water?
Well, if it's grass, good, nice white grass, that's good. One of the concerns I had with some of the horses, probably, I don't know, 20, 30% of the horses at the Biltmore, is that the morning after, they were almost as dehydrated as they were at the finish. And, when you see that, the alarm bells go off and say, what's going on? How come these horses have not had the chance to recover some of the hydration that they lost during the ride? It's been, that was, you know, they finished 8-13 hours ago. So what's going on there? Whereas other horses fully recovered. So the post-exercise period is a very important period. And I think some people... they sort of maybe pack it in a little bit too soon after the ride and sort of forget about where their horse is at or where they need to be at before they just start transporting them home.
Yikes.
Well, that's interesting because my horse, in the notes, from the original papers that we got back, it was noted that my horse didn't rehydrate well, by the next day, even though I recall her drinking quite a bit, but I didn't really give her, many additional electrolytes afterwards, which may have been played a part in that.
Yeah, and of course, if you don't give adequate amounts, then the water won't be kept in. So the water that will be kept in will be there to balance what the horse is taking in with the feed, but it won't be enough necessarily to replace what needs to be replaced that was lost earlier. So that's that's one of the tricky parts of the balance equation is dealing with the now as well as what the past was at the same time. So it's you're trying to do double duty and sometimes at best we're only taking care of one but not the other, and we need to maybe try to look at ways of trying to take care of both at the same time.
So does that mean, I guess, Mike, what you're saying is if you're giving water and they're not getting rebalanced with electrolytes, then they're just going to, they end up peeing out a lot of clear.
Well, that's right. That's what happens. And now that'll be partly offset by the electrolytes that are taken in with feed. But what's in feed will never be enough to replace what's been lost during a 50, 75, or 100-mile ride. The fee that you take in overnight is woefully inadequate to replace the electrolytes that's lost during an event like that. So you'd probably need to, you know, eat something like hay in these feeds for 3, 4, 5 days before you could replace what was lost during then. But at the same time, you're also replacing what's being lost as the horse is just sweating from, you know, standing around and eating. Just they do continue to sweat even at rest all the time. They're always sweating. And we just don't know. We don't see it, but it doesn't mean they're not sweating. They still are.
After rides, they're still frequently re-equilibrating their insides.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've always thought it's almost more dangerous in really low humidity weather because you don't realize how much they're sweating. We've all been trained that, you know, dark-colored urine is a warning sign, right? If it's tea-colored, we get alarmed. If it's coffee-colored, we're panicked.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just water-colored, is that also a warning sign to us then that they're not in electrolyte balance and they're just or not?
So, I'm sorry.
If it's really clear.
Really clear as opposed
and
to
it. And almost no color.
Oh,
yellow.
Oh, you know, that's good.
That's good. Okay.
There's no cause for alarm there. I see what you're getting at. Is the horse getting enough electrolytes? That's your question. If it's a really clear urine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's no way of knowing. What it does mean is that the kidneys are working well. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the horse is hydrated just because you have, a good, clear, steady stream of urine. No, that doesn't mean the horse is hydrated. No, so you can't tell from urine alone.
About hydration, but it's not bad if it's too clear. I was reading too much into it.
Well, it could be. It could be bad if it's too clear. And the only way to know would be to take a sample of that urine and measure the specific gravity. And if it's less than what it should be, then it would be, you know, saying that it's a very dilute urine, and that would be very unnormal for a horse, probably ever, but certainly for a horse in endurance competition or just having completed endurance competition.
Is measuring the specific gravity of urine something that, you know, a layperson could do there at a ride?
Yeah, there's an instrument called a refractometer. It's the same kind of instrument that you would use to measure plasma proteins. And one of the scales on a clinical refractometer is for urine-specific gravity. You can get them for, I think, around $300 to $400 all the way up to a couple thousand dollars for the nicer ones, for the higher-end ones. But, yeah, I think some of them are fairly reasonably priced and accurate enough to give you a good handle on what the urine specific gravity is.
Okay.
That means you got to go out there with your coffee cup and get a little bit.
We have one of our horses who donates regularly.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be something for a Sarah program, because Sarah's been collecting urine samples all the time, but
yeah.
I don't know whether they've been running it through the...
that's also true.
Anyway, something
okay. Any other questions from anybody else at this stage?
I have one question.
Yeah?
I came in late, so you may have covered it, but other than having your horse adequately electrolyted, my horse isn't a great drinker. Is there any other tricks or hints to get him to drink more at the end or in the middle of the race?
I think the main strategy is everything that you do with your horse at home is training your horse to drink at the ride. So it's before you go out on a ride, you make your horse, you don't leave. Your horse wants to go out for a ride. They love it. But you don't leave until they drain a gallon of water with electrolyte supplement in it. And that's something that you can train your horse to do. It can be very, very difficult, and it will be difficult and very annoying at first. But that's the type of approach to take at home so that your horse can do it at a competition, at a ride, because your horse isn't going to want to do anything different at a ride than what you've been doing with your horse day in and day out. So the approach is to really try to do all the things at home that you want your horse to do at a ride. And with something like an electrolyte product and that's dissolved in water, you would probably start at a very low concentration and gradually work your way up over a period of days or weeks to what the recommendations are, the manufacturer's recommendations are for having the right amount of electrolyte in there. So start it with a dilute solution. Don't give your horse a choice between that electrolyte solution and water, because your horse at first will always choose the water because that's what it's used to drinking. That's the taste that it's used to. It hasn't yet learned to associate, the electrolyte solution with anything that's beneficial for it. So you have to remove the choice and just give them water with electrolyte.
You're saying before you go out on a conditioning ride?
Yeah, absolutely. And the strategy there is to have a reservoir of water and electrolytes in the GI tract of the horse to replace what's going to be lost during the first hour and a half to 2 hours of the ride, what's going to be lost through sweating. So that's the idea.
Out of the pasture, and how am I going to make him drink before we go?
Well, you have a bucket, and you gradually train your horse that before you go on that ride, before you cinch up the horse, that he's got to drink this electrolyte solution out of the bucket. So it's just a process of, bringing your horse to the bucket and lifting the bucket up and, getting him to taste it. And it's going to be completely aggravating for a day or two or three or four or whatever it takes. Because your horse will sort of refuse to do it at first. It may take you 2 or 3 hours before he finally drinks it, and then you go. But you have to be absolutely adamant about it and be prepared that this is going to cost you a significant amount of time for the first few days that you're trying to get your horse to do this, because it's not used to doing it. It's going to think, well, why is he making me drink water now? Because it doesn't know, right? It's something that he has to learn.
I guess if you had a little pen or something, you could actually put him in that a couple hours before you plant.
One of the advantages of using quite a bit dilute electrolyte solution with the water is that you can make the water taste pretty good as well. Just throw in some apple juice, a bit of apple juice with it, and that could be a bit of an enticement to get the horse to drink it as well.
Okay, is there a certain brand name I could start doing this with? I don't know. I haven't used this.
What, an electrolyte supplement?
Well, to put in water specifically. I've just squirted it in his mouth maybe at different points in the ride, but I've not put it in water.
Yeah, so squirting a bit in mouth is you're one of the folks that are probably giving your horse a lot less electrolytes than it really needs to replace what's being lost. I was involved in developing a product that's called Perform and Win. We developed it in before the Atlanta Games, so that was quite a while ago, 17 years ago, I guess, we developed. It's called Perform and Win. It's now marketed by Buckeye Nutrition, they're called. So, and it is it's available through Teddy Lancaster, Running Bear Farms, and you can find various internet sources for it as well and get it shipped to you. And some of the time, there's quite a few tack shops that carry it as well. So in my view, it's the best product that's out there. I mean, it was scientifically developed by us. It was tested by us. It was shown to enhance performance by us. We're just I'll be presenting some of that research at the American Equine Practitioners meeting next month, and we'll be publishing that pretty soon. We still just haven't got around to publishing it in quite a few years.
Any other questions? No?
If not, let me add our thanks, and Cheryl can also. Mike, we really appreciate you doing this research and then preparing the reports for each individual rider, which was super, and then following up with the conference and all. And it's just you know, APEX is most appreciative. That's been one of our best projects.
Yes, it's been a time sink linearly as well as intensely during the course of the ride and everything else, and we really appreciate all your efforts for individuals and as the group, and I think it's really going to benefit endurance riders even beyond the group.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, and it has been a pleasure working with all the folks, and yeah, it's been a bit of work, but you know, part of it is just seeing the benefit that comes from it and working with such wonderful people. And thank you very much.
Clap, clap, clap.
Yes.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank
Have
you.
A good night.
Thank you.
Bye.